What are you doing looking at me like that? Where's that smile that belongs on your face? I don't see it. Where is it? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California with Instant Illumination. Where's that smile that should be on your face? I talk with people kind of sadly and strangely and wonderfully and saying, how dare you go around without a smile on your face? And they say, well, I got problems. My life is filled with all sorts of worries and concerns. And I don't have a lot of friends, and I don't have a healthy body, don't have any money. And I say, great. Now, do you think there's anything that you missed? If there's anything you missed, better get it out now, because right now we're going to do a clean sweep. So we need to have everything. So you go in there and you collect every bit of garbage that you got about yourself so we can sweep it out. And he says, well, I thought we weren't supposed to empower it. I said, hey, if the psychiatrist can do it, we can do it too. So you just give it to me and then I'll charge you and we'll work with you and we'll just keep working. And in 30 years from now, you'll have all of your garbage out and then we can start handling it, you know, the problems little by little. And then see, when you're 60 years old, then we can start putting new thoughts in motion for you. And you can start living a happy, harmonious, positive, joyful life. 60 years! That's right, you know. This is what it takes. If you keep putting your attention on your problems, you keep compounding those problems and empowering those problems to be. And I was just looking at Ingeborg's legs, and she has a new knee in one leg, and on the other leg she has a white sock, and on, in fact, both legs she has a stretch sock, one of those elastic type things. And I said, well, I can see why one sock is there for the leg that has the new knee on it, but why do you have it on the other? And he said, well, you have to keep the both legs demanding blood flow through it at a right amount so embolism doesn't develop in there. And that's just part of their program that they have found to be effective and work. Now, isn't it interesting? They put tight socks on there so that the blood has the difficulty in circulating. And they have to put tight socks on both legs so that the blood will have difficulty in circulating to both legs so that it will be forced into both legs equally. Now, this probably is a totally unrighteous question or statement, but why put the socks on at all if they're going to inhibit the circulation of the blood? Well, now, I'm sure the doctors have some logical reason that makes sense to them, and perhaps it's what their grandmother did or what their teachers told them to do years ago, and the teachers told them to do that years ago. And what's your statement, Sylvia?
I thought it was supposed to increase the circulation.
Well, it increases it cannot increase the circulation if you compress it. You put a tourniquet on a leg to keep the blood from getting out, and then you let the blood release through the veins, and then you put the tourniquet back on again. The tourniquet doesn't let the blood circulate. It stops it. And so what you're doing is you're stopping the flow of blood and you're causing it to force. Now, theoretically, you would do everything not to inhibit the normal flow of blood. Of course, if it's going to, bloat up?
Coagulate.
No. If it's going to build up, it's going to get fat because it is not on there, that might be something too, but who knows? These are just all a lot of different terms. The logical way would be not to need that, you know. But again, Ingeborg is going through these experiences because she thinks that's kind of charming. And each little thing that she went through. Just before she went through it, she thought, you know, maybe I really don't need this. I don't feel that bad, you know. And if she had just maintained that feeling, she wouldn't perhaps have even needed it. But it was kind of fun to have a new ball put into her hip socket and a new knee put into her leg. And the next thing you know, we'll have a new foot put on her legs and these other things, you know, do all sorts of crazy stuff. But you see, that's a 60-year thing, you know, where you keep going from bad to worse because you keep having these things go on in your world. And if you can just have a smile on your face, and begin to look around at yourself and see how wonderful you are and how wonderful your life is and how wonderful everything is around you, pretty soon you won't need to have knee replacements and hip replacements and stuff like that. What is the first reason that people start needing to have hip replacements? It's because they have done something stupid. And normally it's a stupid thing. Now, we had one of our students who wanted some help. And so they asked me to carry boxes out of their apartment and big boxes of books and big cabinets and file cabinets and everything else like that that no normal person should have been asked to do, you know. And I mean, here I'm 25 and lively and vital and dynamic, but I shouldn't be asked to do this because this is not the thing that I should be asked to do. Even if I were a stevedore, you wouldn't ask to do that when you have reached certain parameters. And yet it was asked to be done without the second thought about it. Now, naturally, nothing came of it, but it could so easily have come of it because we didn't take into advantage of what we've been pumping into people's consciousness about when you get to reach a certain age. When you get to reach a certain age, you can't do things. You can't walk. You can't run. You can't do a lot of things. This is what they say. And today, they're doing exercises in old folks' homes, not the mausoleums, but in the old folks' homes where people want to get better, and they have them lift weights. And they find that they can get a 3 to 10% gain in their body strength by lifting weights, and just really have a fantastic experience out of it. And it's a blessing and a beautiful thing too. But they do it with a smile. They do it with a smile. They do everything with a smile. And because they do it with a smile, everything works out for them just perfect, and they get so much working for them in a beneficial way. Their life is better, their bodies are better, their health is better, and they're not waiting this 30, 60 years until they start putting positive thoughts in motion about themselves. They start doing it right now. Now, each one of you, whenever I say anything like this, you take umbrage with what I say. And in taking umbrage with what I say, in disagreeing with what I say, and heartily disagreeing with what I say, you are not getting the benefit. If you were just to say, oh, hey, that's something I haven't thought about, that's something worth thinking about, that's a good idea, you know, then beautiful things can happen. But if you say, that's a lot of garbage, Herb, you shouldn't really be talking about stockings that they put on people's legs because they want to compress them and so forth, and they do different things and they do this, and that's true. And then it keeps them from looking bloated, you know, and stuff like that. But whatever. If you can learn to look at life with a smile, go around at all times with a smile, people will think you're whole and perfect. What a terrible thing to think, huh? People will think that you're rich. My goodness. It's this information we just heard about Bill Gates, the richest man in the world. The richest man in the world, he's going to quit. He's retiring, and he's going to go into his charitable operation of some $38-50 billion of funds and giving it out to someone. And the second richest man in the world, Warren Buffett, said, hey, Bill Gates is going to take his genius and put it into being a philanthropist and here I am wasting my time being a philanthropist and giving myself a lot of headaches in the process. Why should I do that when Bill Gates is far more talented in that than I am? I am going to give him my $38 billion that I give to charity over the years. And let take all of my charities and give it right to Bill Gates and let him handle them all. And then I won't have a thing to worry about. And I'll just go around with a smile on my face and be a happy guy. And you can imagine the charities that Warren Buffett has been working with, what they think of this idea. Ha ha ha. They will not think too kindly of that because he's been their sugar daddy all these years. But you see, smile, if those people would have been smiling more toward Warren Buffett, I would venture to say that of the, let's just say 1,000, there's surely more than that, of the 1,000 of groups, of people of groups or organizations that Warren Buffett gives money to every year, I bet not one of those groups, maybe one, but not one, write a personal letter to Warren Buffett and say, thank you, this has been meaningful to this and that and the other thing, or to have a personal relationship with Buffett, to go and visit him and say, Mr. Buffett, your contribution has meant so much to us, we really appreciate it, and we are so thankful that you are who you are. And you see, when you don't get any feedback like that from the people, then you don't feel any desire to give to them anymore, you know? It's a very interesting thing, very interesting thing. One man was giving a gift to his wife, and he gave a gift to his wife, and his wife said, yeah, okay. And so then he gave a bigger gift to his wife. She said, oh, I thank you, I love you, I love you. She had never said, I love you before. But now, all of a sudden, because of the big gift, she's saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. And how interesting that is, how we get our wires crossed, you know. And if we could just always be, with a smile on our face, always be telling people we love them. Because we do. We love everybody. Everyone is our creation. And when we do that, then the blessings, the philanthropy that come our way will be utterly fantastic. Now, Ellen, have you written a note to each one of those people who gave money to Monica for her passing, and instead of flowers, they sent money to the university? Have you sent a letter to each one of them, and have you had me initial the letter and put a little word on too? Have you done that? Because, I mean, that's just good taste. That's just proper things to do. I know. That's what I do when I don't have you guys around. And I just write a thank you letter and a thank you note and answer every single one of them personally, because it means a lot to me, whether someone gives us 10 cents or $10 or 10,000 or a million. You know, it makes no difference. They all get that same personal thank you. So I do it with a smile on my face, and people love it and people appreciate it. And that can happen to you too. So to put a smile on your face and realize that your instant illumination has just begun to sparkle. Know that I love you. I love you. I love you.